continue tonight with our reading and commenting on the letters of Yuan Wu. And this one is entitled by the translator, Time Waits for No One. So he says, all those with conditioned minds are as far apart from true reality as the sky is from the earth. Right now, if you cannot pass through the barrier, it is obviously because your mind has many serious attachments. You can clear these away and reach the realm where there is no conditioned mind. All delusions and defilements and emotional habits will end, and all the obstructions created by conditioned knowledge and arbitrary views and intellectual understanding will be dissolved away. What else is there? This conditioned mind is a mind that has a definition. It has a reality attributed to it. It exists within the fabric of time. It has causes that lead to conclusions. It has a durability that is true of things to which we attribute reality, a table, a chair, and so on. And as long as that is there, from the Zen viewpoint, mistaken ideas of who we are and what the world is like are obstructions. And it is our duty as sincere Zen practitioners to identify the hallmarks of those things, the symptoms, you might say, or the touchstones whereby they may be recognized, and something done that is in the nature of surrender, letting go, seeing through, all those words apply depending on what it is. Because it is a fundamental question in Zen, that is, if we are already Buddha, we're already fully manifesting Buddha nature. It is inescapable from us. What is it that prevents us from knowing it in consciousness? And through that knowing, through that realization, having the roots of suffering drop off. What is this mysterious thing? Nobody has been able to find it. And thus is the condition of what it is to be a human being. We are constrained by those things that have no tangibility, no visibility. They have names, but when searched for, they cannot be found. The eye, the obstruction, the bondage, habitual thought patterns, whatever it may be, they cannot be found. They have no substance. What a unique thing to be imprisoned by nothing. So this is the koan, like a wall against which we press our minds, as it were. And it is the nub of all those traditional koan, such as mu. Otherwise, all these things about true nature would be obvious. And the obviousness that they may have from an intellectual viewpoint becomes only something else to obstruct us. It's a very peculiar and unique endeavor. Those who live in the conditioned mind and know no other are subject to all the factors of suffering and the occasional incursion of joy when their representation of the world happens to match temporarily the way the world seems to manifest to them. for the most part, they are burdened by life. But by what? It's only Zen that asks that question. What is your burden? Bring forth your burden. Bring forth what keeps you in bondage. And what is it that, seeing through the arbitrariness of all our constructions of self, still is not enough for release? What is that? The direction of Zen is to make what is called a pure mind. That can be had through seeing through and being so concerned for the realization of this true self that one is willing to go to any length whatsoever in order to come to that realization. One learns the gut meanings of things like surrender, seeing through, and letting go in this endeavor of the practice of Zen. For those things are easy to speak of. But when placed up against the stark fact that we are already Buddha, and yet we do not realize it, and we cannot find that which obstructs us, we learn something quite different from any neat structuring of the progress of Buddhist practice. We get in there and engage with and search for what really is in the way. So what Yuan Wu says here is, mind has many serious attachments. To what? What are the conditions of our life? It is worthy of everyone undertaking the practice of Zen that no matter what so-called stage they be at, to investigate that. It's a prime investigation. What is it? Why does it not become evident walking down the street, taking a drink of water? Why does it become evident at all times? What is in the way? He says, this is why Nanchuan said that once freed from its conditioning, the ordinary mind is the way. That was stated in the famous discourse with his student, Joshu. Ordinary mind is the way. But what is, this just begs the question, what is this ordinary mind? If the mind that we ordinarily inhabit, full of conditioning and cautions and attachments to self and trying to avoid embarrassment or avoid something, isn't that the ordinary mind? This ordinary mind is beneath that, encompassing it, in fact, manifesting in all its aspects. He says, but as soon as you produce a thought seeking to be ordinary, you've already turned away and missed it. This is the point that is most subtle and hardest to approach. Even immeasurably great people falter and hesitate when they get here. How much the more so for those still in the stage of learning? I've seen a number of advertisements lately for weekend or week-long workshops on this process of realization, ostensibly. One of them is called Big Mind. The by the description, they include all kinds of comfortable things that do not necessarily engage a person seriously with this mysterious, intangible, ungraspable barrier. Great Zen masters have engaged, giving their whole being to, as we sometimes say, sweating blood, in order to break through this invisible thing. Every one of us has to be prepared to do that. He says you must arrive, you must strive with all your might to bite through here and cut off conditioned habits of mind. Be like a person who has died the great death. After your breath is cut off, then you come back to life. Only then do you realize that it is as open as empty space. Only then do you realize the point where your feet are walking on the ground of reality. It's a commonplace within the spiritual life, the serious spiritual life, is to talk about this great death. It occurs not only in Zen. Some speak of dying unto the self. What does that mean? You don't know what that means. It means not holding on to anything. That has to be evidenced in one's behavior. One must be willing to be holding nothing back. Not to have that self-observation that leads to embarrassment or shame or any of those things. There has to be a total letting go and finding out experimentally what that means, this letting go. In a sense, the title, it says, Time Waits for No One. In a sense, the title reveals something about that. For time is like the field within which Nirvana manifests. Sometimes this time feels like a lead blanket, so heavy and onerous it seems to be. And sometimes it feels as thin as gossamer. And so there's hardly a barrier between oneself and this realization. And realization can occur within all the elements of time. Within the hand, the grass, the cloud, the sound of a bird, the sound of music, stubbing one's toe. All these things that occur within time, these things within the realm of samsara, of thingness, can be places where there can be a breakthrough. What is this mysterious thing? A person has to have some imbuement with this idea of, not this idea, but this sense of the mystery of it. And by that I mean the sense of I don't know. I give up all idea of stages and steps and strategies. I give up all the idea of a self that has achieved anything, and yet I retain the idea that it's possible for this being. Absolutely possible for this being to come to this realization, making real in one's life. This is the kind of thing that keeps one's zazen alive. Very different from it being monotonously automatic, or a place of dreaming, or a place of gradually peeling aside things. There's this leap quality to it. Within something that's richly mysterious, that you don't know. But you do fully accept that it is right here, in the cushion, in the floor, in your own consciousness. What is that? And Mu, for example, is your great vehicle. It's a vehicle. Just to ride and be carried by this Mu means there's nothing else there. He says, when you experience profound realization of this matter, you become thoroughly clear, and your faith becomes complete. Faith because you no longer have to operate on the sense that there is a something, but you know that something. And so there's a completion of that that allows you to have a different motivation and orientation towards perhaps the same kind of activities within Zazen. But now you know. He says you are free and at ease and clean, clear through, not knowing anything, not understanding anything. That has to be thoroughly present in one. Not just the idea of not understanding anything, but truly with that sense that all these understandings are so intangible and paltry, so in reference to a certain context, a certain time, a certain group of phenomena. And they can so easily be taken as ornaments or clothings that define a self, and that you let them go willfully and intentionally, knowing that they can always, if necessary, be resurrected, but knowing that in order to come to this essence of who one is, they have to be allowed to be blown away as if they are like gossamer in the wind. He says, as soon as anything touches you, you turn freely with no more constraints and without getting put anywhere. When you want to act, you act, and when you want to go, you go. There is no more gain or loss or affirmation or denial. You encompass everything from top to bottom all at once. And of course, there he gives some hints. Because what is it in one's being as one is in pursuit of this mysterious, intangible thing that is forms this strange barrier between oneself and oneself, as it were? What is this thing? Well, what is it that constrains you from acting? What is it that constrains you from saying that word? What is it that constrains you from the emotional expression at a moment? There's a hint. What is that? What is that thing? What is that thing that causes a pause? He says, how could it be easy to carry into practice or even to approach this realm where there is no conditioned mind? You must be a suitable person to do so. If you are not yet like this, you must put aside mind and body and immerse yourself in silent reflection until you are free from the slightest dependency. Keep watching as you come and go. After a long time, you will naturally come to cover heaven and earth, so that true reality appears ready-made wherever you touch. Again, that's a useful hint. How do you get to, as he calls it, cover heaven and earth? To contain it all. Containing it all means that there's no self and other. There's no boundary. How do you do that? He suggests by watching. Things that arise as obstructions in our being take time to consolidate. They take time to form themselves. We put names on them. We recall similar situations in our past. And thus we thicken them. And that temporal event of the entry of a thought, or a motivation, or a little impulse in the being, quickly hardens from thin gossamer to the weight of lead. And thus, the thing that we call an obstruction grows in us. So there's a certain lightness that has to be present. Not a frivolous lightness, but a lightness in the sense that there's a deep vow that one refuses to contribute to the growth and thickening of these things. One watches. One notices when they start to appear. Anything. Before it has a name. Something. And it is immediately let go. Or it provides an occasion, as he suggests, for you becoming bigger. Growing each time. So that whatever these things are, they are contained by you. They are not ever bigger than you. For the truth is, when we are obstructed, the obstruction contains us. It is bigger than us. We are reduced to a tiny something. Very definable. By that which we have allowed to grow by giving it attention. Uh-oh, there's one of those. And watching, watching as this process of growth occurs. Until you watch and to see its incipient entrance, and it is allowed to dissolve. You have no interest in it whatsoever. It is not important. And although we speak in Zen of these obstructions, the attitude that allows them to dissolve is to have no interest in them whatsoever. And this, of course, is to start to act from the place that has no obstruction, because it has no other, because it is all that there is. Gradually, in that way, in these little acts, by watching and refusing to let things grow, refusing to give them importance, whether they be about some kind of self or some kind of anticipated response to oneself or whatever it may be, letting it go without the least investigation of it. Early on in one's practice, investigation may be useful so that you can see these are intangible. They have a causal condition attached to them. They are structures of understanding, structures of the self, all those sorts of things. But now, it's not necessary to do that anymore. The merest entrance of something that could, if we pondered it, form into a something, is allowed to remain as a quasi nothing, and finally it becomes a nothing. All that happens is we get, as it were, bigger. We get to be all of space. We get, in a very natural, organic way, to know that there is no other. For all those things that used to be other are seen as nothing and allowed to be nothing. As we do that, we confirm within our own selves that same thing that Shakyamuni reputedly uttered upon coming to enlightenment, that in heaven above and earth below, the I am is all there is. So that we are thoroughly, in a sense, purely entering into our pure subjectivity, and yet it is entering into pure objectivity. For these both dissolve into one new thing. We are the world is us. Where is subjective and objective? All by this act of watching, letting be, watching, letting be, before it even names, a name arises for it. Hmm? Then he says, before there was a natural born Shakyamuni Buddha, before there was a spontaneously so Maitreya Buddha, who was it who understood while still in the womb? You must be quick to focus your energy. Time does not wait for people. Suddenly, in one bite, you will bite through, and nobody will be able to do anything about it. To succeed at this, a truly great person must reach the realm of self-realization, independence, and freedom. This biting through is a unique metaphor to this letter. It may have resulted from something that his correspondent used. He may have used that kind of symbol of biting through. But the important thing here is there is a something in us that we realize that is before all the names, before Shakyamuni, before Maitreya, before enlightenment, before delusion, before path, before absence of path, before holy and mundane, before everything, which is arrived at by this very simple, attentive path of watching and be, watching and be. It's entering into a pure state where time finally drops away. For what is time but the matrix of all these things that we consider to be important? It is constructed of those things. It thickens with those things. And as we give them less and less importance, as we are quite unconcerned with which ones come and which ones go, as we are quite unconcerned with establishing that we know anything, or that we ever knew anything, or that there is a self that is something or other, fill in the blank, enlightened, deluded, on the path, a Buddhist, whatever it may be. Before all of that is what is reached whenever any of those things come in, they're all treated the same. Before they take form, before they drag in the temporal associations, before the structure starts to form, they are simply let go. Let be. Very much like the intangible mists of morning that might hover over a group of rushes in a swamp, seeming to take form, seeming to move, seeming to invite attention, but they are nothing. And as you treat them that way, your being becomes like the sun, within whose presence none of these things can survive. So you can, in a sense, welcome whatever is going to come, whether it be nothing or whether it be a whole troop of somethings. They can just be let go. In that way, what Yuan Wu calls the conditioned mind gradually dissipates. Thus, as it dissipates, the realm is cleared where the nirvanic side of our being becomes quite evident. It may become evident in a kind of a global sense, that is to say, all at once, beyond every particularity that happens to be in your vicinity. It may occur in that sense when your eyes are closed. Or it may occur when you are struck by some something. And you realize it is not just a something. It is not just a spoon, a flower, a grass, a cloud, a sound of a bird, whatever it may be, it is not just a something that you previously would have named it as. But it becomes like a spring, a regenerative place. Where nirvana enters, and its ordinary effulgence becomes evident. So we say that it's not so much that an individual becomes enlightened, because individuality, being an attachment to a conditioned form, is quite ungraspable and finally disappears. But it is a world that comes to enlightenment within our consciousness. It is as though this previously heavy blanket of time and all its constructs has become so thin and gossamer-like that at one moment it rends, and the world that was barely seen through it becomes your ordinary place of living. And thus we understand that this realization is of ordinary mind. Ordinary mind, meaning not any constructed mind, not the mind that requires identification with tribe and self-idea, and ideas of the cosmos and the world and one's history and all those sorts of things, but before all that, the original world, fundamental being. These are just pointers, things that we might say to someone to put it into contrast with conditioned being, but ultimately we smile at all those words and let them all be. And then, if we're working on this koan work, that realization gets to be manifested and nurtured by the koan, and manifested by the uninhibited expression of whatever the subject matter is of the koan. Well, what's the important thing? The important thing is doing zazen, just simply observing and letting go without the least making any of it important. That includes goals, wishes, hopes, embarrassments, ideas of self, ideas of structures and everything. Everything. For these are all added on later. So you let them go. Let them go. And sit with a more and more pure, uncluttered consciousness. And that eventually becomes so uncluttered and so pure, as it were, that it becomes the place where we say opening occurs. Easily, simply, without any extra effort required at all. So we'll end there tonight.